Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
All right, guys, welcome to Pulse to the Wall. Tonight on the podcast, we're interviewing Adam Patrick, who has an upstart podcast called You're Talking Over Me. And first of all, Adam, I love that name. I just picture like some drunk Scottishman, like, you're talking over me, you know, he's just like pissed. And it's a great, you know, name for a podcast. You're talking a lot. And anyway, I could see that Adam had all these guests on, and he's been, you know, he had a podcast with Pete Quinones recently where they were talking about the LP and everything going on. And what I wanted to talk about tonight is over the last year, I mean, really since the beginning of COVID, you started to see this fracturing in the Liberty movement where you had all these people that were loosely aligned, we'll say like in the Misesian, Ron Paul Liberty movement, started dividing into different camps. And a couple of things that happened is the LPMC started to really gain some steam. That's the Mises Caucus. And then we also had these people that were like Vin Armani that were saying, the system's going to hell. Just save yourself, you know, build a lifeboat. Don't try to change the system, which is a compelling message to me for sure. And then you also had, not right at the beginning of COVID, but over the last year, I would say there are people that I really enjoy listening to, like Pete Quinones and Matt Erickson, who have taken this kind of approach of what's been described as post-libertarianism. That's very influenced by like Mencius Moldbug, and some others. And then who's the other group of people? Then there's like the Loser Brigade. That's not even worth talking about. I mean, they're irrelevant. And then there are like the Eric Brakey, Tho Bishop types that are advocating using the GOP and influencing the GOP to, you know, achieve our aims. And personally, I'm not sure what I think is the best strategy moving forward. I listen to all these people talk and I find it compelling. So Adam, you've been in this space having these discussions. Where are you sitting right now? And where were you a year ago?
Oh man. So I'll tell you, we kind of talked briefly in the pre-show about it. I will say that I said at the time I was the most confused I think I've ever been in this space, but at the same time, that's incredibly liberating because it's, you know, having called myself a libertarian quite definitively over my lifetime, I always called myself philosophically anarchist. I never called myself an anarchist because I don't know what that means. But I've also been in the bar and restaurant industry for over 16 years now, and I felt like I just was the most intellectually lazy I had ever been in my life over that decade and a half. Where I kind of, you know, if you were to tune into, you know, part of the problem right now, Dave Smith's show, that was the last 15 years of my life before COVID. Anytime somebody would ask me something, I would respond with the requisite Mises, Rothbard, you know, placation that everybody would say in this space. And then COVID hit. And I think this is the reason why all of these ideas that you just mentioned there in the intro are resonating so well, because the theory, the philosophy of libertarianism, which we should just define as Rothbardian anarcho-capitalism, right? That's what we're talking about. We're talking about libertarianism here, I think, or at least I am. Those were put to the test in 2020 because of COVID, and all of that intellectual laziness had to go out the window. And we had to say, okay, well, we're not in peacetime anymore. Like, sure, it's easy to talk about the wars in the Middle East, but they're not directly affecting our lives, right? It's really still theory. It's our money's being stolen by the Fed, and it's, you know, we're bankrolling the military industrial complex. It's quite abstract in the real world. Now, when you're locked in your home and your business is ripped away from you, it makes you start to question things in reality, and it should. The issue for me was when I looked at the, you know, legacy libertarians that we'll call them here for just posterity purposes, they were not changing their mindset. They were not looking to evolve their way of thinking. And they seemed to be almost unfazed by what was happening during COVID, especially the National Libertarian Party. And I just found that to be completely fucking absurd. And I can swear here, right?
Please. Yeah.
Okay. I found it fucking absurd. And, you know, the Mises Caucus, which I'm a part of, for better or for worse, on a national level, I feel like is kind of just as absurd. I'm probably going to bother everybody during this, so just fair warning. I don't think I'm going to make any friends here. But anybody who in June 2021, who's still living in June 2019, should be immediately disregarded as anybody worth listening to. And if you're in the Libertarian Party, you're in the Libertarian space, you're a Democrat, you're a Republican, anybody who hasn't had their life, their philosophy, their mentality, their learning, their growth affected by this last year and a half, immediately dismiss them. They're not worth your time. And for me, it was, let me pay attention to the people who are affected by this and who are talking about this. And other than the Loser Brigade, it's all the people that you mentioned there in the intro. And that really was, it was, you know, I'd never really listened to Free Man Beyond the Wall before the lockdown. I'd never heard of it. It was Pete having on Vin Armani, and it was Pete having on Curtis Yarvin that made me focus so much on what he was talking about and the heterodoxy of that show that made me start asking questions and getting involved with talking to Matt Erickson and trying to figure out what we're trying to do here. And what we kind of all, the conclusion we kind of all came to separately was this idea of Rothbardian anarcho-capitalism doesn't have any praxis. There is no way to get from point A to point B, or let's say point A to point Z, right? There's those 24 letters in the middle that nobody wants to have a conversation about. It's just, you get rid of the state and we'll have this. And people will just get along. There's voluntary interactions. That'll just work. And I don't think that makes any fucking sense at all. And I think a lot of the people in this space came to that same conclusion, that people don't want libertarianism. It is, on paper, a beautiful way to think. It's a beautiful philosophy. It's a perfect philosophy. But we have to ask ourselves, as libertarians or whatever you want to call yourself, why it is that beautiful philosophy is something that nobody fucking wants. Right? If it's so beautiful, if it's so perfect, if it's designed to get us to point Z, this utopian state of, you know, Ancapistan, why the fuck does nobody want to listen to it? And they dismiss it as childish and irrelevant. And when we start asking that question, then we start working toward the praxis. And I think that is where many of us in this space are starting to spend the majority of our time. Does that answer your question? I think so.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's really, like, my ideas have been challenged more in the last year, and like my worldview of the current paradigm we're in have been challenged more in the last year than they have been in the past 5 years. I think it was 2016 when I really went down like the Rothbardian rabbit hole and became, I like you, I never called myself an anarchist. I was just always in favor of decentralizing. I'm like, I'm just a decentralizationist, like to put it, you know, as abstractly as possible. And you know, when all of this happened, let's say like the last year, we witnessed the greatest culture war in American history, at least like, you know, since the Civil War, I would say. Like, it's never been this heated where these battles are being fought. Libertarians who pride themselves on, oh, we're for sound fiscal policy and for protecting civil liberties. In the last year, we just watched the most insane central bank activity we've ever seen. We had a crazy civil liberties crackdown with people getting arrested for going to their local church service for operating their businesses. And where were libertarian ideas for that giant event? It's like, if this was a bar fight and there's a giant brawl going on, libertarians were like this guy like in the corner shadow boxing by himself. Like, we were completely irrelevant. Like, we, like, the idea that the Fed was going crazy did not crack it into the mainstream at all. It was just not in the ether. And that really made me question things. And listening to somebody like Matt Erickson, he's saying like, if this is so great, why aren't people buying it? Mm-hmm. And that's a serious question we have to grapple with. And you have the LPMC who's saying, well, see, we have this very impotent libertarian national party, and they're not inspiring to people, which is like completely fair. Like they do suck at face value. All these people that have been running the party for decades have been an utter failure at getting more than 1% of the votes all the time. And it's like, okay, so when it comes to what should be done from here, it's like, well, of course I'd love to see the establishment of the LP thrown out and have like real libertarians brought in. I think that's completely valid. But at the same time, it's like, okay, well, what's the end game? Like right now, the Mises Caucus is taking over the LP, and then the goal is to what, win seats federally? I mean, in the national elections. And that's like going from, you know, like an amateur fighter, like, oh, we're going to fight some local scrub, and then we're going to jump in there with like the best boxers in the world. Like, it just seemed like it's a huge step up. So I think that may be futile, although I'd love to see it actually happen. And it looks like it's going to. And then, honestly, the most inspiring thing that I heard was like Vin Armani's story of going to Saipan and just kind of getting off the grid and becoming self-sufficient. So, and then the real pragmatic thing, which a lot of libertarians and their purism have written off, which is somebody like Ron DeSantis, who is not a libertarian. He's very imperfect on foreign policy and all these things, but he's actually fighting back effectively against the cathedral sort of establishment, progressive policies. And I think it's foolish for libertarians to reject like, oh, Ron DeSantis isn't a libertarian, so we can't get our support behind him. Which if he runs in 2024 against Joe Biden, like that's a no-brainer that we should actually support that guy and hope that the Mises Caucus puts up a candidate that actually gets the message to people. So that's sort of where I'm at. I'm not in any camp.
One thing, just for the record, it'd be Kamala, not Biden.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Let's be honest. Yeah.
Can we just say right now that we hope that Biden lives until he's 120? Because we don't deserve him. We really don't. He's such a gift from God to listen to that guy go out and blather on about fucking pizza or whatever the hell he talks about. I mean, if you thought Trump was a treat, which I did, I mean, this guy is an evolution.
It's just so
two stages of evolution above Trump as far as fucking just making me laugh my ass off every time he says something. So yeah, I feel like internally we just don't deserve him as a human being, but
yeah. I find it just like so comical though, that if you were just looking objectively from the outside and if you were like an alien, it's like, wow, there are 200 million adults or so in this country and they're going through all this hell right now, and that's who they put in charge. Interesting. Well,
that shows you something, doesn't it, about what the mainstream or what, you know. Okay, so the Libertarian Party is selling libertarianism, right? Even prior to the Mises Caucus, they're selling a better brand of liberty than we've seen in mainstream national politics in our lifetime, right? And the overwhelming majority of the people in the country wanted Joe Biden, his incapacitated, blithering idiot self, to be their leader. That should tell you right there why libertarianism is not appealing. Right. It you are selling something that only libertarians will buy. And that is a messaging and marketing problem that falls on them, not on the buyer. Right. So if I'm selling, I don't know, coffee mugs and nobody's buying them, I can't get mad at the customer base that doesn't exist for not buying my coffee mugs. It's I'm clearly not doing the job of positioning myself well. And I have to look at it and say, well, you know, I'm selling coffee in, I don't know, Barbados, where people want daiquiris. You know, am I even pitching a message that is even, are people even capable of wanting to buy? And it seems to me that libertarianism is just not that thing. And if we're looking at the Libertarian Party under Sorwark, right, under Nicky Boy, was a better political party than the Libertarian Party will be now moving forward or under the Mises Caucus as a political party, as something designed to, you know, fight for winning elections or to work within electoral politics. It was better than the Mises Caucus will run it. Now, I don't know if the Mises Caucus, the idea of messaging and marketing, I don't see like a bunch of immature children doing that well. And I would say that because a lot of the people involved in the MC nationally are honest, good, true, caring, normal human beings, that they're not cut out for this, because you can't really be involved in national politics and be like a regular caring human, empathetic human. You have to be like a Sorwark. You have to be this devious behind the scenes, passive aggressive fucking douchebag in order to make those things work. And you can see how he If you watch Sorwark on Twitter, you can see how he maneuvers to get under people's skin, like how he never really says anything incendiary, but sort of hints at stuff to get you to react. And then when you react, you look like the crazy motherfucker, right? And his way of doing that, it's something that you have to be a politician to do that. And I don't see anybody in the Mises caucus that, while they have passion and caring and empathy and love for what they're doing, they're not Machiavellian, because you can't be both. You can't be a normal human being and be Machiavellian. So I don't think a national LP that the Mises caucus will achieve what they want to achieve. As a matter of fact, I think it's going to backfire quite explicitly. Now, on the local level, there's a lot there. You can network with people like here in Connecticut, the people I know in the Mises caucus of the LP in Connecticut. We talk about agorism all the time. We talk about backing Republican candidates all the time. It's a very utilitarian way of looking at politics. When I look at Twitter, when I look at these ridiculous LNC Zoom calls, they're embarrassing. It's an embarrassing thing to watch. It's cringe as fuck. You have to turn it off and go, I don't want to be associated with these people. They're fucking children. What are you arguing about? Like, the decorum. It's really bad. And I feel like the Mises caucus, we kind of knew this from the beginning, that it was going to go this way. Just nobody wanted to say it because all of the detractors were saying it too, and you don't want to agree with them. But you can see it going off the rails real fucking fast. And I figured we would just make fun of them first before we get on to the other things that you talked about. But yeah, I don't know, man. I think Dave Smith is better served doing a podcast. I think the LP is better served. I get it that, you know, we don't want to see a party that calls itself libertarian act non-libertarian. I get that's the impetus to take it over. Then here's my suggestion. Don't call yourself a libertarian. Call yourself something else and carry on productively aside from that shit and leave it there. Let it die. Let it be alone.
Yeah, definitely. I've also been distancing myself from the word libertarian to describe myself. If somebody knows, like, they're well-versed in the political compass, I'll say, like, yeah, I'm a right-wing libertarian just for general decentralizing, if somebody knows. But to a normal average person, it's a very misleading and just muddy-watered term. So I wanted to talk about one thing real quick. You talked about how libertarianism is a tough sell. People don't want to buy it. And I've been trying to figure this out. We've been talking about it on the podcast for months with different guests. Like, what was it that made Ron Paul's campaign different? Like, is that just lightning in a bottle that we may never see again? What was it exactly that actually got millions of people to follow him? And remember, we asked Matt Erickson this, and he said that he thinks that for the first time in decades, Ron Paul was just like this honest old man who was telling the truth. And it wasn't that people bought into Austrian economics or anything like that. Yep. And I think that's honestly, it's true. And I mean, the media assassinated his presidential campaign, and he never stood a chance of actually winning. Even if it was, you know, in a fair fight, he would have been elected, possibly. But it was kind of like you're talking about, like, you need to be a Machiavellian to take this kind of power. And it's inherently against, you know, true libertarian principles. So it kind of leaves us in this position where it's like, okay, this isn't doable for us because it's not who you are. Like, I think Michael Heiss, every time I listen to that guy talk, I'm like, he just seems like a really good dude who really cares about actually saving the world. Like, he's very genuine. Mm-hmm. I don't see him playing games where he's actually, like, fucking people over and getting his policies through. It just doesn't seem like who he is. So I completely get your point about what you're saying.
You know, people have to remember with Ron Paul, well, first of all, you and apparently Matt are 100% right. In order to make a splash like that, he had to come out on the stage with Rudy Giuliani and say something that was so antithetical to what people were listening to or wanted to hear at that time in order to make that splash. And if you pull that to today, I mean, the episode that with Matt Erickson on Pete's show that dropped today, I mean, Matt's Twitter followers went up 400 people in like 5 hours. So when you're dropping new ideas on an audience that's looking, that is receptive to it naturally, that is a movement that creates itself emergently, right? If you're trying to do that on purpose, if you're trying to create emergent order purposefully, well, it's not going to work. That's not that, like Dave Smith's idea of recreating the Ron Paul movement. Well, the reason that's not going to work is because it's not spontaneous. It's not off the cuff. It's not right there. You're trying to do it. And it's never going to work that way. So, sorry, what's the second part of your question?
Oh, God, we were flowing pretty well there. Yeah. What was it? Okay, so not selling. It's hard sell. And then, and then like you were talking about people within the LPMC that are just good, honest people. I can't remember who it was that I was, maybe it was on Erickson and Pete's podcast from today, but they were saying that the LPMC will be just like in the mainstream media. If they succeed, they'll be the new Proud Boys. Like they will be smeared so fast.
It'll be even worse than the Proud Boys because the Proud Boys are emergent order in and of themselves. So they have something they are doing outside of the political realm. That's like a fraternity. Right. They're not trying to influence politics so much as they're trying to disrupt social culture, right? Like the general society that's going on right now, that they have kind of an emergent purpose. Everything in the Mises Caucus is being orchestrated and designed by people who don't belong in the forum that they're in, right? They don't. And this is to their credit as human beings, that they're good, honest, caring people who really want to see positive change happen in the world. Well, politics isn't where you do that. That's not your forum, right? If you want to do something about it, create a podcast, or you want to go out and grassroots campaign, or you want to talk to people, you know, in community at the community level and forums like that, I think that's really good. I don't see any real organization or leadership in the Mises Caucus. I don't see anyone directing other people how to maneuver in this space. And so I think the people at the top level, right? Heiss, Dave Smith, Angela McArdle, they're very good people, very well-intentioned people. Their most ardent followers are childish ideologues who are getting themselves in over their head in something they don't fully understand that will end up hurting not just them, but everybody involved. And when you try to bring this up to Dave, he doesn't want anything to do with it. He wants to be not, he will ostracize you immediately and say he's not responsible for other people's actions, and yet go out there and call for the nation to follow him and listen to him. It's incredibly destabilizing and really dangerous. It's very, very dangerous what he's doing. And a lot of people have said this to him. Vin Armani said this to him. Sal Mayweather said this to him. I've said this to him. The only interaction I've ever had on Twitter with Dave was me saying just what I said to you. And he didn't want anything to do with that. He's like, that's not my problem. People are grown adults. They could do what they want. I'm like, they're fucking not, man. You know what you're doing, but they don't know what they're doing. And they will blindly follow you to the point where they'll fucking January 6th your ass, dude. And you're going to get associated with something like that because you can't control this. You don't know what you're doing. You think you're Ron Paul from 2008 and you're not. It doesn't work like that. There's equity built up in somebody like Ron Paul, who worked for decades in his community to get to where he got. And you're trying to recreate it. It's incredibly fucking dangerous to do what he's doing. And so many people have tried to say that, and he wants nothing to do with it. And so at some point, you wash your hands of it and move on.
It doesn't help that he's called himself the libertarian Tupac. It's like, Dave, I love the spirit, but you should not be naming yourself after a guy who was assassinated in the height of his career.
Well, I mean, you could call yourself that when you're running a top level podcast, right? It's a provocative way to get people to listen to your show where you're talking about current events, politics, whatever. Dave was doing that very well. Sticking his hat into this ring means you are involving yourself in something where people can get actually hurt. And that is irresponsible and dangerous. And somebody needs to really come out and say that so that people start to think about what they're doing here. Now, of course, this is not going to resonate with most people, but it's not wrong.
Well, what you're saying is, I honestly haven't considered this that deeply when we're talking about the end game of the Mises Caucus. And it's not even like a hidden idea. It's their mission statement is to have a revolution, like a real revolution. Like first you take over the LP and then you take over national policy and state and local and everything. And talking about disbanding the military industrial complex and auditing the Federal Reserve, things that we've been cheering on for a lot of us for a decade. But what actually happens when you start to get there? I mean, you're talking serious, dirty politics. And that's why listening to, I think Tho Bishop has such a compelling argument. You know, apart from just having like the coolest name in the Liberty movement, Tho Bishop just sounds cooler than Dave Smith. No offense to Dave, but,
a little generic,
but yeah, but I mean, you know, I remember Dave having this criticism of Bernie Sanders, during the presidential campaign in 2016 and 2020, where he said that he's like, Bernie just doesn't have any killer instinct. And that really, it rang true to me. I'm like, yeah, this guy, he doesn't have killer instinct. He's a true believer in his ideology. Yeah. And I think he cares and believes that democratic socialism will actually like save the world, but I don't think he has what it takes to actually like fight the DNC and win an election. He clearly didn't. He demonstrated it twice. He bent the knee. And when I like, okay, I'm in, we're both in the Mises Caucus Facebook page. I think there's something like 10,000 people on that page. And when we're talking about having a political revolution and you think about what needs to be done to do that and the fight that you're in for, when I look at the posts and all the people in the Mises Caucus, my thought isn't that these people are savages ready to take over, you know, the establishment. It's these are like very well-read, nice, knowledgeable, friendly, well-adjusted people. And that is, it's not at all an insult in broad strokes.
Right. Yeah.
However, it shows that you are not well-equipped to take on the fight that you're about to take on. If you succeed. And I, like I said, I think they will take over the Libertarian Party. They have all the momentum, but I don't think they're ready for the onslaught of both the media and the GOP and DNC that they're going to unleash on them, you know, when they succeed.
Oh, I don't think it's even going to get that far. I do think the Mises Caucus will take over the Libertarian Party. And here's what will happen, right? They will basically force the other caucuses or whatever to disband and all of those people will figure out a way to use Machiavellian tactics to infiltrate the Mises Caucus and destroy it from within. That is what's going to happen. There will never be, the Mises Caucus will never get to the point where they are a player on a national level in order to be considered the Proud Boys. It just will never happen. And if it does, it will be because whomever assumes the leadership of the Libertarian Party, if they're Mises Caucus oriented or they're favorable to that idea, they will water down the message and they'll become just as milquetoast as Dave has become. That's the only way that it will work. So either the message is going to get diluted or it will get retaken over by the same people they're pushing out right now. Either way, it will never, it's just my opinion, but probably right, it will never get to the point where it matters to anyone outside of the LP. That's how I see the pattern playing out from the inside. And even if I step out and look at it, it's even more pronounced. Now, the idea that Tho Bishop is talking about, and I know Eric Brakey a little bit, but I follow Tho a little bit more closely. He's a little bit more aligned in my social circle. His idea is very much not to take over the Republican Party. It's that you use a bigger platform to get your ideas across in a much more adult and professional way. And Tho's got a great background. I mean, his father is an incredible writer, thinker, you know, political guy. And so the pedigree is there to be able to put this stuff forward. And nobody is under the illusion that Tho Bishop is not just capable of, but even wants to take over the Republican Party. It's just that he sees that as a better forum for this message. And he's not wrong. You know, I don't know if it's going to be massively effective, but it couldn't be less effective than what the LP is currently doing nationally. Even on a local level, it's probably equal to what the LP could accomplish on a municipal local level, right? Or a county level. On a national level, I mean, it's not even close. But that's probably as political as I would even go. I tend to err on the side that I think all of that is a waste of time. So it would be like, the difference between what Tho Bishop is talking about and what Michael Heiss is talking about or Dave Smith is sort of like being the tallest midget in the room. And I don't know if you're trying to play like an NBA Finals series, if that shit really matters that much. I would be more aligned with the apolitical or, dare I say it, accelerationist point of view as a tactic to get us where we want to go. But yeah, the LP, I have to emphasize it. It's a complete fucking waste of time.
Yeah. It's, you know, that the debate that Phil Bishop and Dave Smith had on Lions of Liberty, I went into listening to that. I'd heard the name Phil Bishop maybe once or twice. Never, I wasn't on Twitter. I didn't really pay attention to what he had to say. I've listened to Dave for years. I'm a huge fan. He's one of my intellectual heroes. You know, I thought going into it, I'm going to be on Dave's side. Like, I've been listening to him long enough. Whatever Dave says is probably going to be where I stand. But by the end of it, I was like, damn, like, Phil made a really compelling argument. And I'm not saying I had a winner in mind, but I feel like if I sat down with Dave after that and had a beer or Phil, I would decide, like, either one could sell me on their idea if it was a one-on-one conversation. I was so undecided. And that's why it's just a very confusing time. But hearing what you're saying now and hearing what Matt was saying on Pete's show, it's like, I don't know. I'm open-minded to.
I promised myself I wouldn't call anybody retarded on this episode. I promised my girlfriend that I feel like I'm going to call somebody retarded, and I don't want to say that. I do want to just make that. I have a lot of respect for all of these people, a lot of personal respect for them. And the only reason that I would ever offer an opinion on any of this is out of love for them as people and the work they put in the past and currently. That I would never talk about, you know, Dave Smith this way if I didn't respect him, appreciate him, and love him for everything he's done, and his audience and all of the people in this community. Like, we are like Pete said, a family who's never all met each other. And that kind of love, it all of this comes from a good place. It comes from a place of worrying about the outcome and seeing an end game that isn't productive. And you know, to talk about end games that are productive, you know, you mentioned Vin Armani earlier, and Vin was somebody who really affected the first like half of this show, like the first maybe 30 episodes of this show, 40 episodes of the show, before I started getting more into the Matt Erickson kind of thing that we're doing now. That idea of religion, meaning, purpose, the God-shaped hole in man's heart that Pascal talked about, the tearing down fences, you know, without knowing what they were built for, those ideas resonated with me so deeply. And what the conclusion I came to, which seems to be the conclusion that almost everybody comes to separately, is that libertarianism is almost unnecessary as a philosophy. And I was just messaging with Matt right before the show, trying to figure out a way to kind of distill this down into like an elevator talk, kind of three sentence talking point of what we're trying to do. And I said, why don't we just imagine that libertarianism or Rothbardian anarcho-capitalism just never existed? Like, just wipe it off the face of history. It never existed. What would we be thinking now? And I don't have an answer for that. The one conclusion I've drawn is that libertarianism is Christianity minus Christ. And it seems to me, if you just got rid of libertarianism, you already have the template there to not hurt people and take their stuff. So it seems to me to be atheistically redundant.
Yeah. And I'm absolutely. And I'm glad you went there. Because I mean, we actually interviewed Vin back in March, and the podcast, we were just talking about like Saipan, and I don't even know how we got to it, but we started talking about like God and religion and faith and all these really deep things that I was blindsided by. And I was happy to have it. I mean, it was honestly, it left a huge impact on me and kind of re-examining my past and my beliefs and everything. And Mike and I were both raised very devout Catholic. And I would say by the time I was like 17 or 18, I had kind of like learned about the scandals in the Catholic Church and all of these inconsistencies. And I wasn't intellectually satisfied with any answer I heard from a priest or anybody on these issues. So I sort of drifted away from the church and the practice in general. And in that absence, I didn't become an atheist or anything like that. I would say I believed in God, but I didn't have like a clear, I didn't have that higher ideal very deeply distilled in me. And it was a few years later that I discovered, it was Dave Smith on Rogan, where I had been a fan of Ron Paul. He was running for president in 2012 when I was a senior in high school. But it wasn't until a few years later that I heard Dave Smith and then started going down this libertarian rabbit hole. And I'm like, okay, this is like the moral code that is the highest ideal, like that can like kind of become the social fabric of our society. And you know, years later, I come to the conclusion full circle that that isn't where it's at. Like Vin said in the podcast we had with him, all of these, like, there are no real new ideas that you hear anymore. Like everything are there. It's like the repackaging of very old ideas. And like you just said, Christianity is very closely aligned with libertarianism, but it begs the question, okay, why do you need, like, Christianity is tried and true. It's been around much longer. It's more popular. So what is really the point of libertarianism right. as a belief system? And when you said that just now, it really rang true with me. It's like, you know, it's kind of forced me to go back and say, okay, where do my beliefs actually come from? And I think it has much more to do with my upbringing and like the society I grew up in general, more than it has to do with a political philosophy.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so even if you're an atheist living in the Western world, right, your system of morality is still congruent with Christian beliefs because that's how you're raised. Right?
Right.
Everything in the Western world, everything from Western Europe all the way over here, it's all Christian values. The entire country was founded on Christian values. Now, you can deny that you're a Christian. You can say that you don't believe in God. That's totally fine. But your morality is still stemming from your upbringing in this particular culture. So when I listen to like a Hitchens or a Dawkins or a Hicks or somebody like that who's an atheist, well, they agree with me or you or anybody else on what the morality is. Everybody agrees, don't hurt people and take their stuff. They just take the God out of it. Now, they're smart enough to understand how to live in polite society without hurting other people and taking their stuff. The problem is, again, with the followers, right, quote unquote, those atheists, those people are debaucherous lunatics, right, who lead society down the path of the Church of Woke, right? That they're the ones who, you know, don't understand or don't have the intellect or, you know, don't have the capability or upbringing or structure, order, hierarchy in their lives to be able to disseminate morality in a utilitarian way. And so now you have this 100 to 120 year old, you know, pattern of the Church of Woke that is an atheistic religion, right? Because we are, as I said earlier, like bred or evolved or have this innate need to fill the hole in our hearts with meaning and purpose. Well, they fill it with what? Masks, Trump, anything that they could possibly find to fill it with. And understand that, understand this innate need for meaning and purpose and follow the logic train of which one of those paths takes you where you want to go. Right? Do you want to go Church of Woke or do you want to go like right wing structure, order, and hierarchy? Because it seems to me, if we go back and look through the historical cycles and patterns, one of those things destroys civilization and the other one ends up pretty well for people involved. So I think that really, I don't want to speak for Ben, but I feel like that was his kind of main argument is, you know, he's all in. God, Christ, Eastern Orthodox. I'm not quite there myself. I'm still kind of exploring it. But I would say understand that no matter what, religion is inevitable. And people are going to find their religion regardless. You might as well give them or help them or help promote the one that gets you to a place of peace and prosperity and good, honest truth than the one that leads you to chaos, destruction, and disorder.
Yeah. You know, Nick and I had a very similar, like I said, upbringing when it came to the religious beliefs and all that. You know, we didn't really talk about it much when we were going through it together. We both kind of like stopped going to church, never really discussed it. Neither of us became atheists or anything like that, like Nick said. And I was kind of the same as Nick. He got big into libertarianism and turned me onto it. And then we started talking about these ideas all the time. And then once I got married and had kids, it's kind of like it came full circle where it's like, okay, I'm glad I never threw the whole baby out with the bathwater with religion, because I never denied there was a God. And now I'm like definitely leaning back towards it. And, you know, our family goes to church now and just a non-denominational Christian thing. And I just like the positivity element of it. We have community. We meet people. It's nothing but positivity. We're not worshiping man as the highest power. And I think it's a healthy environment to have everyone, all the kids in, because if I don't do that, well, the school's going to replace that with something else. And, you know, right now that's my biggest challenge is what are my alternate paths to get them out of public schools, because they are basically trying to make my kids into my enemies by sending mm-hmm. them there. Mm-hmm. So it's I'd much rather have religion as the answer than having someone else occupy that need.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't quite figured out or reconciled the accelerationist points that are very appealing to me with everything else that's appealing to me. I don't quite know, because when I hear something like that, my first instinct is, how quickly can we collapse that aspect of society and rebuild? The problem is there, we haven't yet, as right-wing anarchists or whatever you want to call what we're doing here, we haven't yet created the structures in order to have the fail-safe there to accelerate to that point, right? Because if you accelerate past all that, if you get all of this shit to just fucking collapse as soon as possible because you're trying to control the collapse, there has to be this sort of trampoline at the end or pillow or something to catch people. And we haven't developed that yet. We haven't figured out how to get there yet. And so if I'm trying to mash all these ideas together in my head, my first instinct is to try to figure out how to create the system first and then sort of push all of that off a cliff. But I don't think you could have one without the other, because I feel like this structure we're currently living under, this governance, this statecraft that we're currently living under, probably has like another 150 years left in it before it really fizzles out. I don't think it's going to be as quick as people think. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if we can save enough people in the meantime without pushing it a little bit farther. There's a lot to that. There's a lot of like Nick Land in there. There's a little bit of Yarvin in there. You know, my own personal way of looking at it is to kind of fracture the left and the right a little bit more. So I know who my people are and who they aren't. And COVID kind of did that for us. But then there's the, you know, Yarvin concept of the clear pill, which makes a lot of sense to me too, right? Where you just disassociate and you stop granting power to the system by paying attention to it at all. And that seems to me to be the opposite of accelerationism, even though he's sort of called an accelerationist. And it harkens back to, I've talked about this a little bit on Twitter and on some shows the past couple of weeks, but Ernst Jünger's Eimischville, which he wrote, and he developed the concept of the anarch. And the anarch is to the anarchist what the monarch is to the monarchist. And essentially the anarch would be like the Thoreau or the Kaczynski that sort of walks off into the wilderness and leaves the whole thing alone. Well, I didn't realize this, but Yarvin's clear pill is directly influenced by Jünger's anarch. And he said that on pod. I didn't realize that, but it makes total sense now that you think about it. When you start thinking about Gray Mare for the Nihilist Prince, well, it's totally influenced by that idea. So when I said originally that it leaves me very confused, it seems like all of these, everything except political libertarian party, which makes no sense to me, all of the rest of this stuff makes a lot of sense to me. And I just want to keep growing the ideas and having the conversations until it all starts clicking, because I feel like it is clicking. The fact that Matt and Pete had that conversation, the fact that Tho's getting on board, the fact that, you know, Popular Liberty is talking about his concept of archotropism on a couple of different shows. And it seems that people are hungry for these ideas, that maybe we didn't realize how hungry libertarians were for something they didn't know they wanted, and how easy it was to sell that idea in, you know, 8 hours. When you can barely sell libertarianism to anyone in 50 years.
Right.
Yeah. And you know, when you're talking about the whole kind of like secede, I mean, it's really closely aligned with like agorism, like this idea that you just kind of secede from the system. You don't try to fight it. You just insulate yourself the best you can. And I mean, that's honestly a very freeing thing in and of itself. It's like the sort of political strategy is that we need to win a fight. And the other strategy is that, you know, if you can avoid a fight, then you avoid the fight. Like, you don't need to get in a fight if you don't need to. And, you know, I'll have to admit that one of my guilty pleasures of content that I consume every once in a while in small doses is Owen Benjamin, because I still think the dude's hilarious, even though he's somewhat gone off the deep end. But I mean, man, the guy, you have to admit, he was right about some things recently. I mean, I remember listening to, I'm like, oh, I wonder what Owen Benjamin's thinking back like last May and June. And people were talking about all the COVID lockdowns and all this stuff. He's like, oh, what do I do about it? Listen, goats, land, raised bed gardens. And I'm like, you know what? He's right. Like, you kind of like get away from that kind of thing.
Yeah. You know, the other great thing about him is he was talking about like just popping out kids, you know, he's like, oh, you know, I've got whatever, three or four at the time. And then I want five. Like, he keeps wanting to have kids. And there's so many other people I talk to who are like intimidated to bring kids into the world right now, which I totally have sympathy with. But at the same time, like, I wouldn't let what's going on deprive you of the greatest thing in life either. So It's like, I see both sides of that, but as a father, it's like, I have four kids. I would not be afraid to have another one because of that. It's like, if anything, we need more good minds in this world with good influences.
I've been told by multiple people that I personally am an anomaly in this space because I don't have children and have no ambitions to have children. And that makes me weird for thinking the way that I do and focusing on social order, hierarchy, religion, that usually you find that kind of stuff when you have children. I'll take that as a compliment.
Yeah, no, that's you know, Clint from Liberty Lockdown said the same story. You know, he's doesn't have kids either, and he was talking about his like religious awakening on the show. He hasn't quite got there either, but he's a huge fan of Vin Armani. He's like, hey, maybe if I had kids, I would have that awakening, but it hasn't come yet. So you're not, yeah. There's definitely others like you out there too, and yeah, it's everyone's got their own path.
yeah, that's actually been probably the most interesting thing is seeing how many people this message of maybe post-libertarianism appeals to, or just, I don't know, fucking with libertarianism in general, how easy that is to appeal to people. Like how hungry, like I said, how hungry they are for it. It seems like, man, if we had tried this like 15 years ago, maybe we wouldn't be in this position. So it's that intellectual laziness, or the idea that we've got everything figured out and we're no longer allowing ourselves to be intellectually heterodox, to question everything. And that's what anarchists are supposed to do. If that's what people call themselves, anarchists, you're supposed to question everything. You're supposed to look at systems and say, well, I don't like that system. Why don't I like that system? Okay, well, now I've developed another. Why don't I like that one? Right? It's not just supposed to be some sort of trite placation of, well, all authority sucks, because that's just silly. That's a silly way to look at life. Authority, unless you want to go be the anarch, it's going to exist in your life and you're a byproduct of it. Like at that point, you're a grown man or woman or otherwise, and you're a byproduct of your upbringing. And you can't deny that. So I don't know. It's been really validating for me to see all of these ideas that seem so weird and crazy just to be accepted so quickly. I think that shows us the weakness of the ideology that we kind of subscribe to, and how much it needs to evolve in our current age, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. And to pivot just a little bit, when it comes to the mission statement of the Mises Caucus, where the idea is that we're trying to red pill as many people as possible, like get the message out there and, you know, change hearts and minds. Part of me thinks that, okay, if you look at the last 5 years, like the, you know, presidential campaign and nomination of Donald Trump, Jeffrey Epstein, COVID, the Russia hoax, all of these things, if anybody hasn't caught on to how things work in the last 5 years, I'm not sure what we can do from here that actually will wake them up. I mean, if you have witnessed and paid attention to everything that's gone on, I'm not sure what speech you're going to hear about the Fed that's going to like really red pill you and unplug you from the matrix. I think we've kind of hit that critical mass of people already, or at least we're close to it.
Right. If the Hunter Biden cover up right before, you know, the October surprise with the laptop, if that didn't wake people up, like the whole lockstep movement to scrub a story that would have demolished Joe Biden, it's like, okay, do you guys really still think the system is fair and honor and unity or whatever all this shit he's talking about? Like you said, so, we had a critical mass.
Yeah. So what COVID did, what COVID very specifically did, and probably, you know, it wouldn't have happened if Trump wasn't president. Like if Obama or somebody was president during COVID, it wouldn't have worked this way. So I'm going to take it the way that it worked out, because I think it works in my benefit or our benefit. It really split the country and maybe the world, but I don't really pay attention to the rest of the world, really split the country into one camp and another camp, and very ideologically aligned left versus right, people who are willing to accept the risks and the joys that life affords you as a human being out there enjoying the world, and those who think the air is poison, right? And that is a beautiful thing. COVID radicalized more people than the Libertarian Party could ever hope to. So if I'm looking at anything that makes tactical or strategic sense here in 2021, it's, well, I don't want to live even next door to somebody who thinks the fucking air is poison, who like sanitizes their fucking meatballs when they're walking out of the grocery store. I want to be around people who want to give me a hug and have a barbecue. And, you know, I don't smoke weed, but if I did, maybe share a joint, like our fucking spit maybe touches the same piece of paper, right? Those are the kind of it that you want to spend your time around. COVID showed you who those people are and who they're not. And it actually did more for radical decentralization than any libertarian idea in 50 or 60 years. Because now you see people governor shopping, voting with their feet and their wallets to move to Florida or the Dakotas or Texas-ish. You know, places where they feel like they're going to be around like-minded people. That is an incredibly beautiful impetus for radical decentralization. You're seeing the groundwork laid emergently and organically because of an outside influence that affected the entire country. That's something that should be what, of course, the LP did not do anything remotely close to capitalizing on, but the GOP did, right? That was, and DeSantis did. And so anybody who right now who thinks that the Libertarian Party is looking out for their best interests as opposed to Ron DeSantis, well, you're basically just going to take your principles and get on the privately owned boxcar taking you to the gulag, telling everybody how fucking principled you are as you get shot in the back of the head. Like, good fucking luck with that. We're going to governor shop and vote with our feet and our wallets for the person who's going to protect our life right now until we can figure this out. That's a beautiful thing. That we fractured this, because this idea of the United States of America, this idea that we're all one people here and trying to move in the same direction, I don't think anybody fucking wants that. I don't think the left or right or middle, nobody wants to do that. Like, we want to be friendly with each other and not fucking hurt each other or hurt each other's feelings. We don't want to live around people who think we're crazy people. Mm-hmm. Or who are crazy people to us. We don't want to do that. We want to live peacefully with people who think like we do, and so do they. So this is good. This is a good thing that's happened.
When you talk about the poison air people, that reminds me when I went to school to be an aircraft mechanic, and the first day of class, our instructor told us, you know, there's mechanics and there's parts changers, and our goal is to make you guys mechanics. You know, parts changer, they can tell you to go change the spark plug on the third cylinder, and they can do it. But a mechanic can tell you why it needs to be changed. They can troubleshoot. And watching all these people throughout COVID, I realized that there's free thinkers and there's information regurgitators. And that's all there is people that can go, do you see how crazy this shit is? And then you talk to someone else and they're like, well, Dr. Fauci said once the cases come down to level 6, then we can go back to this. And it's like, they're not capable of free thought. And it's like, are you seriously, that's your stance? Like, you trust these people on the news? And there are way more of those people that I know in my firsthand anecdotal experience than I would have ever imagined.
I mean, religion is inevitable.
Mm-hmm.
The Church of Woke is inevitable. You know, if you're that empty and you're searching for something, you found your God. I think you guys, I think your podcast put out a tweet that said something very similar to this within the last week or so, that, you know, the mask is the talisman and the vaccine is the baptism. And, you know, that's a great analogy. I mean, it's spot fucking on. And you wouldn't need that they wouldn't need that if they were able to get that sense of meaning and purpose from something way more productive for society. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a great point. I mean, it's been nothing shy of religious. So, yeah, like the tweet we put out was about how the mask is, it's the yarmulke, it's the crucifix, it's the religious symbolism to show everyone on the street where you identify and that you believe in, and this to be your Lord and Savior, the capital S science. The vaccination is the baptism, just to show you've been washed clean of the of the yuckiness. So,
well, and you know, when we were talking about, like, this whole episode has been about libertarian infighting, which has become a meme that every libertarian knows about, that the only thing libertarians hate more than progressives or conservatives or other libertarians. And to me, it's true. And I mean, it's somewhat necessary to a point, but I mean, I don't even know how necessary it actually is. Like, who cares what the label is? Just kind of push your beliefs and your rhetoric and everything. But when we, what drives me crazy, and you know, part of the problem has been my favorite go-to staple of a podcast for the last 5 years. And, but I have to admit that, like, it's become like half, just kind of libertarian party stuff. And I find it exhausting because right now we're living through the greatest paradigm shift of the 21st century and probably of the last century since World War II. We're witnessing like the craziest changing of the guard and all of this new stuff coming in. And we're spending all of our time talking about this stuff. It's like, okay, yeah, I mean, the Loser Brigade, they suck. Like, they're terrible. You can have your debates about taking over the GOP or the LP. Meanwhile, we have things like vaccine passports coming into New York, and the Fed is doing things they've never dreamt of. And so are foreign governments and all these things. And while we're all busy fighting with each other, the world is burning down around us. And I don't find it particularly useful to keep the infighting going while this is happening. And I think if we could, like, if we could just kind of summarize what we could all agree the best policy is moving forward right now, it's vote with your feet. It's work on the local level and don't engage in political fights that you don't have to. Would you say that's a fair assessment?
I do. And I do want to just add on to that and say that I pay enough attention to national libertarian politics in order to have these conversations, but I spend almost 0% of my time focusing on any of that. Like, I'm just aware enough of it to be able to talk to you right now. And but no energy of mine is spent on the Zoom calls or paying any attention to any of that bullshit. I think it's all silly. If I do anything, I do it locally with very good people here in my own community who are focused on, you know, changing our own town or neighborhood. The rest of it is, I would just advise everybody to ignore it and let it die a peaceful death that you never even have to see. It's a complete fucking waste of time. And it's one of the reasons, if you want to compare, you know, part of the problem with Free Man Beyond the Wall, one of the reasons it's getting to the point that I don't want to, I hate to put Pete and Dave in this position. I'm kind of uncomfortable doing it, but it's almost getting to the point where you have to pick one or the other. And I think that's going to be a reality in the next year. And I know everyone's probably going to stay friendly in that circle, like, regardless of their pick, but I don't know how you could listen to Free Man and Part of the Problem in the same day. I don't know how that's even possible at this point, because they're saying, they're speaking, or they're allowing such different conversations in their spaces, and they're mutually exclusive at this point. If you're growing your mind, there's no way you could possibly listen to Dave. And if you're listening to Dave, there's no way you could possibly be growing your mind. And it's become seeing two very good friends work in very different directions and wanting everyone in the space to, you know, still be friendly and get along and love each other is becoming difficult. I hope that we all stay friendly, but I don't know how you do both at this point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it was more concerning is you're the second person this week to say that they're picking between Pete and Dave, which breaks my heart because I love them both. And I don't want to make
it. For
me, decision.
It's a no-brainer.
Yeah.
I haven't listened to Part of the Problem in months.
Yeah.
It doesn't resonate with me at all.
And, right.
You know, yeah. Well, you know, I was going to say, I think Dave is at his best when he's commenting on, you know, here's a clip of Brian Stelter, him and Robbie just rip it to shreds, and it's really good.
Yep.
Where I completely differ, or where I'm not sold, is like we talked about all the LP stuff, and that divide that you're talking about between the Free Man Beyond the Wall and Part of the Problem is a very real thing. You see these camps kind of solidifying, and I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing that the Liberty Movement is fracturing. I don't think we need to galvanize and there's all this unity talk, I don't think that's really necessary. I think, hey, LPMC people, if you can pull it off and it works, good for you. If people want to become agorists and you know, decentralize and get into local communities that can nullify this stuff, then good for them. Whatever works. Mm-hmm. But hey, okay, Adam, so we're coming up on time, and this is a new segment that we're doing with our guests, depending on how serious they are. You know, we wouldn't play this game with somebody like Dr. Stephen Hicks, who we just interviewed, who's like a very serious.
That's the one person you should have played this game because it would have made that episode just that much better to see who you wanted to fucking roundhouse in the mouth or something.
Okay. All right. So are you ready for our rapid fire segment to close out the show?
Let's do it.
All right. Number one, what is more likely to be true? Donald Trump is a Russian asset, or we landed on the moon in 1969?
I think we landed on the moon. Yes.
Okay. Okay. Number two, who's the hotter MILF, Kristi Noem or Sarah Palin circa 2012?
Oh, I mean, Kristi Noem is the hottest MILF. I don't even go all the way back to her birth. Probably. I mean, oh my God, are you kidding me? Holy shit. It's not even close. Yeah, no.
Okay.
Yeah,
I'm partial to Sarah Palin. I think maybe because of the glasses, but okay.
Well, there's also that idiocy factor. There's a little bit of attraction to moronic women. So maybe there's that, but Kristi Noem actually has some intelligence. So I don't know where the breaker is there.
Number three, would you rather give Joe Biden his nightly sponge bath or JB Pritzker a full body deep tissue massage?
I don't know who the second person is.
Oh, you know, okay. JB Pritzker, we gotta pull up a picture. He's our dear leader here in Illinois, our governor.
See, I told you, he doesn't get any airtime with Cuomo and
he wants to be a rock star. He should. He should be right up there with Cuomo and all those guys.
Was it a sponge bath with Biden? Was that the first part of the question?
Yeah, you know that he gets a nightly sponge bath.
I'll,
we know
I'll
that
sponge
that's a
Biden
thing.
Down. I feel like we could have like a guy to guy moment there.
That's the way safer bet. You can look up Pritzker afterwards, but that's the way safer bet because at least you have the soap and water going there. It's going to mitigate versus what you'll see Pritzker. He looks like if Chicago was a person.
I would say at any time I would get to spend with Joe Biden, having a conversation in person would be a blessing from the Lord God Almighty. And so I would easily take that as the option.
You could have him tell you stories about the depression while you're like putting the shampoo in.
He could read me sweet nothings. I'll take it.
So number four, the FBI arrests you for domestic terrorism. What song do they play on repeat to get you to talk?
Oh my God. So it's gotta be a song I hate. Yes. And anything by Red Hot Chili Peppers or Beastie Boys, anything by Beastie Boys or Red Hot Chili Peppers post Blood Sugar Sex Magik. Yeah.
Did not expect that, but that's funny.
Well, they're both fucking horrendous fans.
Okay. So on a related note, which libertarian podcaster would cut it best in prison?
Cut it. What do you mean by cut it?
Like who would survive the best in prison?
Oh, fuck. I'm no longer considering Pete Quinones as libertarian. So I'm going to say Dave Smith could fucking hold his own in law. I'm saying he can swing some fucking rights and probably hold his own shit. Yeah. Yeah.
Who would do the worst?
Tom Woods.
I would say, I think Malice would get himself in trouble. Tom Woods is a good answer. I think he's just.
I mean, Malice at least lifts weights and knows like Brazilian jiu-jitsu. Tom Woods is pretty fucked if he ever goes to prison.
Malice does BJJ?
I think so, yeah. I think that's what he saw. Oh, okay. Ronan, yeah. He's been training for a couple of years now. He got all jacked up and shit. He's going to be all strong now. He's all big and bulked up.
Yeah, he's a ripped little fella. Okay, number six. Would you rather eat gourmet ice cream with Nancy Pelosi or smoke Parmesan cheese with Hunter Biden?
There would be a nap violation if I ever got in the same room with Nancy Pelosi. So I'm just going to go with anything Hunter Biden, because at least that dude like smokes crack and it's kind of fun. There's no way I could possibly, I'm not going to Fed post on your shit. I'm not going to tell you what it is. Okay. It's a horrendous human being.
If you could TP one politician's house, who would it be?
TP, jeez. By TP, you mean, I'm not going to Fed post. Sorry. No, I said I wasn't going to do that. I mean, let's go with Newsom. I mean, anything I can do to antagonize the worst governor in the country, just antagonize the fuck out of that guy. Yeah. Yeah. We'll TP Newsom's house.
Fair enough.
All right. Last question. Yeah, there was a little lag there. Okay, last question. Who would win in a fight between Ben Shapiro and Rachel Maddow?
Oh, Rachel Maddow. Are you kidding?
Jeez. I thought so, too.
poor Ben. No, so, dude, a funny, if you don't mind me saying, a funny line from the Matt conversation. Matt was talking about Ben Shapiro, and he said Ben Shapiro 100 years ago would have been an anarchist, and 200 years ago would have been a witch.
Yeah, you know what's really funny?
Fucking lost my shit.
Yeah, I thought that was great.
So Matt was my first episode back when it was just my show. He's my first guest, and it was kind of interesting listening on Pete. It was so much was him saying the same things. He's kind of like he must have his bit down, like a stand up skit, because he monologued the same thing. Like I heard probably 10 different lines he said in my first episode, and because it's what he's into and what he reads. But he said the exact same thing on my first episode, and I was like, "Holy shit! I never thought about that." But he talked about Mencius Moebug. The only thing is, we recorded like the day after the election, so it's interesting hearing him contrast that with right now. But he's definitely more fired up.
I love Matt. I love listening to him talk. I think he's very interesting, and he actually challenges, you know, a lot of the beliefs that I would say either hold or used to hold in the recent past. And it was funny. I mean, he came on here a second time to talk about Trump, like managing to pull off the coup and remain president January 20th
for over 2 hours.
For over 2 hours. And he was sold up until like January. I think it was January 6th where he's like, okay, it's not happening. But I think he was just like hedging his bets. Like, if I'm right about this, it is going to catapult me to be like, you know, chief. So I respect the hustle. You know, I think it was, he was doing a little bit of a bit. Yeah.
Well, but if you don't put the ideas out there and you hold them in, someone else will come up with them next, and they might not think about them as well as you do. So it's better to go out there and be vulnerable and risk something in public and put your thoughts out there and see how they're disseminated or batted around with other people. And if you're right or you're onto something, then other people will help you work towards those goals or those ideas, and you'll do it together. And that's something that I think I appreciate about this little in-group that I'm lucky to be a part of, is that they're not afraid to go out there and say things and maybe be wrong, because it's not about being right first. It's not like CNN. It's, well, someone has to say it, and we have to be vulnerable enough for someone else to disagree and work this out and try to figure out where we're going. The worst thing you can do is just parrot other people's ideas from 50 years ago. So that's why I appreciate these ladies and gentlemen so much.
Absolutely. So, Adam, that will bring us to a close. You want to plug your podcast, how to follow you on Twitter, any other plugs you want to get in?
Yeah. So you can follow me on any social media platform, although the only one I'm really on anymore is Twitter. It's I am Adam Patrick, which should be pretty easy because I am Adam Patrick. And then it's You're Talking Over Me, Y-E-R, talking with no G, over me, pretty colloquial. You're Talking Over Me. Podcast, you can get that on any podcatcher. And YouTube, it's there. It doesn't have video yet, but it will when I figure out how to do this. And there will be a Substack coming in the future. But for right now, that's pretty much it. And if you want to message me or DM me or whatever on any of those platforms, Facebook, Twitter, happy to have a conversation, happy to talk, happy for you to tell me why I'm right or wrong. And we'll get there as polite and as adult as possible. So thank you very much, guys.
Perfect. Yeah, thank you. Yeah. And guys, please go to iTunes, rate and review our show if you don't mind. And we will be at Freedom Fest July 21st through 24th. So,
Mike, we should start plugging our Twitter. We never have. And I just started using Twitter this week. So let me see. Okay. Our Twitter handle is @PaulsToTheWalls with a Z at the end. @PaulsToTheWalls with the Z, because it was taken. We had a Twitter handle, you know, since we started the show, and we never really used it other than to just like post episodes. I'm actually trying to engage more like the last few days, and it's fun. Twitter is much more engaging than Facebook. I have to say I'm enjoying it.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. We're very not tech savvy, but we're learning. So my laptop that I'm recording on right now is from Obama's first term, but I'm going to upgrade pretty shortly.
So. I think mine's from Reagan's first term. So
it's All right.
It's just the rest of the house. All right.
Gotcha. Well, cool. Adam, thank you so much for your time. And guys, go over and subscribe to his show. Thanks,
fellas.